When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to episode 226 of the Washed Up Emo podcast. I am Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com. Today in the podcast, we welcome again Jeff Caudill from Gameface. He talks about his new band, Low Coast. They have an album out right now called Existing the Dream out on Spartan Records. If you're thinking what it sounds like, Death Cab for Cutie meets Wilco. So if that's any help, dive into the new Low Coast record. What's great is Jeff and I did this in person here in California, and it was nice after so many interviews far away and remote during COVID to be able to do this in person again. So it was a great chat, and I hope you enjoy the chat with Jeff. Learn more about Low Coast at SpartanRecords.com. And again, that album is Existing the Dream out on Spartan Records right now. Now, with Patreon, if you want to just join, you can join as a free member. So it doesn't need to cost any money, but if you want to pay, that's also very cool, but you don't have to. It is patreon.com/washedupemo. So please check that out and just join for free. There's no obligation and there'll be different content related. So enjoy. This is episode 226 of the Washed Up Emo podcast with Jeff Caudill from Gameface and Low Coast. Perfect. Jeff, what's going on?
Just enjoying the sun. Thank you again for having Melody on the show last time. It was, I mean, I enjoyed listening to her way more than I enjoyed listening to my own voice, but she is, you know, quite, she's on it. Yeah, and it was a real treat for me to
listen. It was pretty good. I had a lot of comments from people saying, "Hey, that was really cool to have her dad and then her," and then it was almost like you were out of the room, mm-hmm, and she was not more relaxed,
I noticed. Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I noticed she perked up and became sort of her thing. And that's, you know, growing up and being, you know, your own person. And that's, we've seen that happen over the past year or so. And now that she's moved out, she's living up in UC Santa Cruz. We can tell, you know, there's a difference where she's really understanding who she is. She's finding what she really likes, and it's sad, but it's also really fun to watch.
Totally.
Yeah. And I was just saying earlier, her band's playing a frat party in Berkeley tonight, which I think I'm dying to know how that goes. I think Gameface may have played one or two. You know, when we first started off, we were playing like backyards and parties and things like that. But I'm dying to check in with her later. But a couple weeks ago, she was supposed to play, her band was supposed to play a 21 and over show. And she, of course, she's 18. And I didn't want to say, hey, what's going on with that? But it turns out, the show didn't happen anyway. The headliner had to cancel, and it didn't happen anyway. But I was on the edge of my seat, you know, I wanted to see how the club handled it, because I have a story, and I had to call her and tell her about this after I found out that she was going to play this thing, because it just made me remember this.
Yeah.
So back in, you know, when I was probably like 19. My first band, it was like a cover punk cover band in high school. We were called No Such Thing. We played like 7 Seconds, Social Distortion, and we did we named the band after an Agent Orange song, No Such Thing. And so we had a few originals. We also played like a punk rock version of If You Leave by OMD, you know, from the Pretty in Pink soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
We also played the song Pretty in Pink by the Psychedelic Furs. We probably would have just been happy just playing all of the John Hughes movie music. But we had this band, and we were just playing parties, we played at high school, you know, played in the quad or whatever. But the first time that we got like a real club show, it was in Huntington Beach. And me and the drummer were younger. We were still in high school at the time. And the bass player and guitarist were 2 years ahead of us. So they had already been graduated and they were over 21. So we showed up to play this show, and it was our first time being on a flyer and like, you know, really like, oh, we're playing, you know, I remember it was Night Moves. The club's called Night Moves in Huntington Beach. And so, you know, we told our friends, and I didn't know, we didn't really stop to think that it was it was 21 and over. I had no idea. But we went as far as to, we showed up and we did sound check and we were all ready to play. And then we discovered that it was, you know, or the guy was like, hey, you know, let's see your ID. And I was like, ah, shit. Like, I didn't know. And so they were like, well, that sucks. You know, like we really can't let you play. And then we had some friends show up and no one could come in. No one could get in the building. We're like, ah, fuck. And then, so we were like, okay, we did sound check and it sounded great. Like it was the first time we actually sounded like a real band. You know, we were like, oh wow, this, you know, we could really hear ourselves.
Right. It wasn't
playing in the garage and it wasn't playing in like a backyard. So we were like, ah, shit. So we packed up. But then the owner or the booking agent or whoever the guy was, the promoter, there was an office in the club, and one of the bouncers was like, hey, the booking guy wants to talk to you guys. And we're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe he wants to, you know, have us back on a different night or whatever. But basically he just wanted to tell us that that we wasted his time. And it wasn't cool. But the thing is, like, I guess 18 or 19 year old me, not as warm and not as kind as I should have been. So I was like not having it, and he was just sort of like reading us the riot act and like, hey, you wasted our time, you know, you wasted. I'm spending money on these guys, the bouncers. We could be home with our families. And so I don't really know where this even came from, but I'm like, he says, you know, we could be home with our families tonight instead of here with you assholes. And I was like, oh, you have a family. And I was like, it was like the longest, you know, 5 seconds of silence. And the next thing we know, we're running down the hall to try to get out of this club because they're chasing after us. And we jump into...
What about your shit? What about all your gear?
We were all packed up.
Oh, you're all packed up.
Luckily. But we got into... We pretty much all came in one car, like a small, like, you know, Volkswagen. Our bass player's driving. And then the four or five bouncers, they're all like surrounding the car. They wouldn't let us leave the parking lot. And we're like, they were just trying to freak us out. It probably wasn't that big of a deal. But to me, it was like, oh, we're all going to die. And so we finally escape. But anyway, it was.
I love that.
It was.
Did you ever play Night Moves again?
No, we did not. We did not.
Is Night Moves have a different venue after hours? Like that sounds like an after hours.
It sounds like, now thinking about it now. Yeah, it
sounds a little.
But sketchy. But I thought about that. I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
So you told Melody.
Yeah, I was just like, hey, you know, here's a cautionary tale. I just want to make sure that, you know, that you're upfront about that stuff. And
couldn't the booking agent have asked how old you guys were?
I don't know. It was 1989 or whatever. You know, I don't know. But Melody said that the venue, they said they knew, or they knew that, and they were totally cool with it, and they were just going to figure it out, like, you know, just not having her near the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
But I thought that was funny that she...
That's funny. I mean, I remember playing in bands and just being like, okay, you're going to have X's on your hands. If you drink or you do anything, we are going to take... Like, they sort of, like, threaten you before. Like, do not mess this up.
Totally.
Your rights to be able to... Or not your rights. You're here to play.
Yeah.
And that's cool, but do not. And so I think it was more of... the pre, like before the, instead of the Riot Act, after we got the Riot Act before.
Right, right. Yeah, I just, since that, or following that, we just only played all ages shows, you know, up until, you know, we were like 30, probably, yeah. You know, it was just nothing but all ages shows after that. And, you know, and we didn't really understand the scene. We were just happy to be, we were just happy to be able to play on a real stage.
Right.
Even if it was just for sound check.
Absolutely. I like that. So that's tonight. When are you going to get the update? You going to get someone live streaming it for you?
No, I'm just hoping for a text that everything's cool.
How long is their set? How many songs have they got?
It's a full set. I think, you know, they like maybe 9 or 10 songs.
Cool.
I think. Yeah. 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 I mean, she's got a catalog already.
I know.
It's fun. And the guy, you know, like you guys already had talked about, but the guys that she's playing with, they're like, they're a few years older than her, but they're pros, you know, they're really good. And I can't remember if I had mentioned this on that podcast, but the two that I had met before when I went to see them in Berkeley, I met it was the drummer and the bassist. I saw them before, and I recognized them, and they recognized me too. And they're like, "Hey, you're Melody's dad." He said, "We have one goal this show. We want to impress Melody's dad." And one of the dudes was like, "He's like, yeah." He's like, "I, you know, he showed me his phone. He's like, you know, I've been listening to Game Face." So
that's awesome. Like,
yeah. So that was.
And how old were they? Like 21, 20?
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
The next generation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm glad it's happening.
It's still happening. I think that's what people forget as we get older, and maybe we're going to more reunions or more anniversary shows.
Oh yeah, it's happening whether we want it to or not.
It's just, like I said, I think that's what was so exciting about talking to her, and I think more of those discussions, to just hear how they're dealing with things, hear what they're doing. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you experienced before me.
Yeah. Totally.
After you, it's not that ideal, like, or that idea of DIY or that punk rock thing is still there. And that's what's, I think, kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And Melody really does get it. She totally understands, like, the ethos of this whole scene. It's pretty great.
Yeah. So again, great job, Dad. So Dad's got a new project.
New project. Well, it's not the newest project on the block, but it's new now. It's because it's finally real.
Finally out.
Yeah, but I've been this has been a thing that I've been, a band that I've been working on for years.
How long?
Probably three, you know, like we, you know, it pre-pandemic, we started recording, I'm always writing songs, and I've always been like, I think I've always been sort of chasing the idea of this band, like guys who, like, you know, just players who are way above my skill level. People that can come in and take my songs to other levels. I've done a bunch of between like Game Face broke up in early 2000s, and I went right to doing solo records. I did like, you know, a bunch of stuff, mostly playing everything on my own. You know, I had a few people come in, or I would just get people to come in and play whoever I could wrangle. Because I had a vision of what I wanted to do, and like, okay, this is what I wanted to sound like. But I've never really, I mean, we did, you know, a band, like a live band did sort of form around that, but it never really was. It was my thing.
Right.
And it was like just sort of being supported by other players. You know, we had Robbie Wrist and, you know, Popeye played a lot on, you know, and, but, I'd always been sort of chasing the idea of having a band where we're all equal. We all, you know, we just treat it as its own entity. And I finally And it was probably a good thing that, you know, the pandemic happened and it derailed the recording, and we, you know, had to really, we all had to sort of pause and, you know, just think about what it is that is important, or what is fulfilling. And I think that we all of us agree that playing, especially at the age that we're men of a certain age, and, being able to still get in a room and play with people that inspire, and that's really, it's top of the list for me. And so I'm really happy that we have found this and that we are all equally excited about it. And so, yeah, the record.
And it's not all on you.
Yeah. And that's it. That's been nice to feel that support, because I've just sort of taken, you know, it's just sort of had been sort of a given that, you know, in all of the solo stuff I've been putting out, I didn't expect anyone to be as invested in it as I was, of course. But now it's really nice to feel like everyone is equally as invested in, It shows in the product and in what we made, and it shows when we play together, and it's been cool. So I really have been like wanting this for decades. And
wow.
This is to take nothing away from Game Face. Those are my life bros, and
absolutely.
You know, and my, you know, like they're, and I don't feel like that's over, but I've always wanted to a band that does the things that this band does. So, yeah, it's a really hopeful place to be right now.
Rad.
Yeah.
And then I think you had said to me, I think after we were done with Melody, that or even if we were just chatting, maybe at one of the shows, if it was the Troubadour, was the songs itself for this are sort of a different thing for you, like from tone, correct?
Yeah. I mean, they all kind of originate in a similar way, but because these guys are so good, and they're so they're coming at it from a different angle than me. There was a little bit of an element of surprise when we were recording, you know, like, or when we were working out the songs, like with past projects, I could already see that what the song was going to be before we worked it out, and in this band there's a little bit more of the experimentation, a little more element of a surprise. We're trying stuff that I maybe wouldn't have landed on, you know, had it just been left up to only me. So,
what was that like to feel?
It was
like the first time someone was like, wait a minute, what about this? And then your mind, you're like, I usually do X. Was that, I think that would be fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is like, well, that's the thing. Like it was both fun and then a little scary and then a little bit liberating. Cause I always say that with Game Face. I'm like, you know, like let's try to, you know, let's see where we can take this. But I always know, like, or we always know, like we always know what we do. And we don't want to, we never really wanted to go that far out in one way or the other, because then it alienates the bands that you have, and you know, you don't want to sound like a completely different thing. But when I was like, well, you know, we can try doing like a 5-minute fucking weird space jam just to see what, you know, see if that is something that we enjoy, or like a weird, you know, string intro or
I mean, even just to have the second guitar shred,
yeah,
which you're usually a three-piece,
yeah.
And then to have keys,
yeah, the keys, like, really, I mean, and Brian on keys, he wasn't really even going to be in the band, but he ended up playing like on every song, just about every song on the record. Now he's just in the band because we love him, and he's in there now. But
so what sound scratches did that itch? Did Low Coast itch for you?
I mean.
Hey, if you need an exciting new record to look forward to, Iodine Recordings, the Boston-based record label, is releasing the 30th anniversary edition of Quicksand's classic debut, Slip, on vinyl. This is the album's first time on vinyl in over a decade with completely remastered sound. This deluxe gatefold edition with slipcase comes with a poster, a deluxe LP, and a 64-page hardcover book. The book chronicles the album's history and has commentary from Anthrax, Hole, Rise Against, Youth of Today, Papa Roach, and more. Experience this iconic post-hardcore record in a brand new way with the 30th anniversary edition of Quicksand's Slip, available for pre-order now and in stores on March 31st, 2023. And since they returned in 2021, Iodine Recordings has released almost 20 albums to date from bands like Stretch Armstrong, The Darling Fire, One Line Drawing, Jerome's Dream, Soaker Fire, and more. Head on over to iodinerecordings.com for more and follow them on Instagram at Iodine Recordings.
I've always, even, you know, even back in the day when starting off, like we, you know, Game Face, we never a hardcore band. But we always played. We played hardcore shows. That was just the sort of the scene that we fell into, and it was great because I loved all that stuff. But I just in my guts, like we were never going to play that type of thing. And I'm glad that we were accepted as accepted as we were in that scene, in the hardcore scene, or in the punk scene, or emo scene, or you know, any of that stuff. On the because we were always sort of floating outside of all those things. But I, you know, I loved. You know, right after junior high, when I sort of graduated from being only into metal, you know, I started listening to REM and, you know, a little more like new, like, you know, just like that sort of new wavy college rock type thing. And I loved, you know, Uncle Tupelo and Buffalo Tom and this more jangly type of stuff. And that's always been a kind of an influence on everything that I've done. Even Game Face, it comes through a little bit. There's a little bit of jangle. There's a little bit of twang.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always really wanted, like, if you know, like, if I, in my heart, if I, you know, I've always wanted to be in the Heartbreakers. You know, like, if I had a band that could play like that band, that's what I'd want to do. You know. You know, just American jangly rock, and that's kind of just been the thing that's really kind of been in my heart the whole time.
So give me a Rickenbacker and let's go.
Yeah, yeah. And so now it feels like exactly that. We've got our Benmont Tench and we've got our Mike Campbell, and it's great. So
Jeff Cotto, yeah. And the Heartbreakers.
Yeah. Doesn't quite have the same ring.
No, it doesn't actually.
Yeah.
But no, it's so you've wanted to kind of have this.
But yeah.
And then why did writing those songs, did you have some of these ideas a long ass time ago? And then finally it sort of solidified with this? Because it's sort of rad to hear that you're doing something that you've wanted to do,
yeah.
And finally had a place to do it.
I think all my songs could have gone that way.
It's with just that group.
But I just didn't have that group. And the truth is, for this batch of songs, I thought I was going to be writing another solo record, and I thought this was going to be like a really stripped down, stark, depressing solo record. And I did a couple demos, and the first four or five songs were, you know, just strict acoustic, but I just, you know, I just kept stockpiling them. But then I started, like, you know, there's always have some rock riffs and things like that. But as I started to connect with these guys and it started to seem like it was going to swing towards being a band, then I'm like, okay, this is now is the time. So yeah, to finally get like this band that I've been sort of dreaming about at 51, it's you know, I guess better late than never.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you could. I like that you had these songs. You were going to do acoustic, and then, you know, you could have just gone that route.
Yeah, I mean that's what I've just been sort of conditioned to do, you know, and just putting stuff out on my own, not really even, like, I haven't, you know, it has not been like a, it's never been a career path for me. I've just been, it's been, you know, my outlet, my creative outlet. It's an art project. But now I really, I want to treat this band with a little more reverence, because I feel like we I feel like we deserve it.
So what's different about this record for you from a promotion wise, or is it going to be more touring or more?
Well, all that remains to be seen. The goal is, yes, we want to play. Like we want to get out and do, we want to play wherever they'll have us. But as a new band starting at zero, and also being, like I said, a band of men of a certain age, the opportunities aren't really there,
right,
at the moment, at least. But that is not going to stop us from trying. Being on a proper label, you know, I so far, you know, it's been a definite, like a big sort of a step up from what I've been doing, you know, especially with the solo stuff, because that's just on my own. But yeah, it's been really nice to you know, to have like a little team, to, you know, have people, you know, in our corner, and that, you know, that really get their album, they get the band, they're really behind the project. So that's been cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
And then what's some, if someone's listening to this and check out songs or mention a few and sort of maybe the sound or some of the stories behind it, or ones you want to mention?
Try to describe it to someone. Like I said, if Tom Petty and Death Cab for Cutie had a band together, that might be pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's definitely has like a indie rock thing, but there is that Americana jangle. We also were blessed with the album being mixed by Kevin Ratterman from Elliot, he's done a lot of really great projects in that world too, that sort of Americana thing. He's working on with an artist called Strand of Oaks. And that was, Kevin did a record with them a while back, and that was the one that I heard, and I was like, okay, I think this is the guy for us, because he's, you know, has a foot, obviously a foot in the sort of post-hardcore emo thing. We have a connection, you know, being on same record label back in the day.
Yep.
But he's, you know, working on these like sort of like hippie jangly bands now. And I thought he would be the right guy.
That's so perfect.
Yeah. So that worked out really great. But yeah. And so our first single was called Hard to Believe, and we made this video. This is also like back. This is like probably during the pandemic. I sent the song around just to like friends and family, close people that we were close to. And I asked them to, you know, listen to the song, and if it moved you, you know, take a video of yourself singing it, just your face, or you know, just or we just want to see your face. But we ended up, you know, getting a bunch of people to participate, and that video came out really nice. That's out there now. But yeah, the first two songs on the record are available to stream on all the streaming things right now,
and then. More stuff. So you're hoping for tours to come up and sort of taking a swing differently than your solo stuff.
We have a few local shows now, but yeah, we are. Right now is the stage where, you know, the sky's the limit. Anything can happen, and we'll probably get a nice slap of reality sometime soon. But right now it's fun. Like for me, like it's always been for every project I've done. The most fun are the weeks or the months, I guess, leading up to when the record comes out.
Right.
All the sort of like all the possibilities, like, you know, you put throughout a single and you get all this great feedback, or, you know, or you're working on the artwork and everyone's getting excited, or you're making stuff, making a video, or you're doing all the artistic things. But then once the release date comes, it's real, and everyone's kind of looking at the results, and then you're sort of faced with, is this successful, you know? And I've always had to sort of redefine success, you know. But I mean, regardless, we're, you know, very, very proud of this record, and we're gonna, you know, we're do, you know, whatever we can, but. Yeah, it is tough, like, you know, to have something that's basically starting at zero and putting so much into the songs. Like, you know, I've written songs about, you know, these kind of get down in the depths a little bit, you know, of just shit that I want to talk about and, you know, want to put out there. You spend a lot of time making these things, and then it's there, then it's out there for everyone to hear. And some people maybe listen to the first 15 seconds of every song and they move on. And so that's what's kind of hard to take. It's hard with every project.
Right.
But,
Do you want to talk about some of the issues that you mentioned on the record, or?
Yeah, we could. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, of course, the song Hard to Believe is, you know, I tried to touch on the, you know, the divide that we have in our, especially in the country, but just, you know, just the idea that it's so hard to talk to people who are of a different, I mean, especially like a political mindset, and how when you don't address problems, they loom larger and larger and larger in your mind, and it becomes harder to meet. And so, and I'm just, you know, especially over these past few years, it's been pretty gnarly, you know, just watching people, you know, like just sort of devolve and we're not able to communicate like we used to, or I don't know, maybe we never have, but it's just definitely a lot more amplified now.
Yeah.
A song or two where I don't know if I want you to know what it's really about. You know, I did write some songs about, specifically about people that have passed. Like that was kind of like, it was like a goal. It's like, I'm going to write a song about this person, or at least like write a song that will remind me of this person.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need you to know, specifically what, you know, each line is about.
Right.
There's when I was in eighth grade, my best friend died. He was on like a Boy Scout trip and he fell off a cliff in the middle of the night. You know, it was like fucked up accident. And, I didn't know, like, you know, of course, I was at home. I had like a soccer game in the morning. His dad came over to my house, talked to my dad, and then they told me. And, you know, just my mind just went fucking blank. You know, I had no idea how to process any of that.
Right.
And then, you know, I kind of had a shitty eighth grade year, and I, you know, sort of worked it out the best I could. But I definitely didn't really go through the right way to grieve. No one really talked to me about it. You know, not to discredit my parents or whatever, but
right.
You know, no one knew how to deal with that. But the weirdest, or not the weirdest thing, but the thing that came back to me decades later, there was another guy, another friend. It was, you know, it's kind of like the three of us. And when the one friend passed away, me and the other guy that was left, we did not know how to move on, and we ended up almost immediately, we just stopped talking to each other. Like, it was like neither of us existed to the other one, and I thought that was, I mean, it felt like kind of natural at the time. Like I was just sort of freaked. I was freaked out about being around him because it reminded me of this fucking tragedy. But, yeah. And so we ended up, you know, moving on, going to high school, going into the same high school, but we just passed each other in the hall as if we, you know, didn't know each other. But it wasn't until like pretty recently, you know, in the past like 10 years or so, I reached out and was like, "Hey man." And we both kind of had the same thing to say. We're like, "Dude, I had no no support, and I had nearly no idea how to even deal with that. But it's kind of, I thought it was interesting that we both had the same experience. Yeah. And how fucked up it was that we just couldn't communicate. We couldn't, like, you know, there was nobody really there to help us process that, you know, because we were, you know, I don't know, like 13 years old or.
Right.
So there's a song that addresses that.
But, awesome.
But again, I don't care if you know that's what it's about. I think I care that you get that sort of a general feeling of how that feels, but you know,
and then relate it to yourself, or take a line that you like, totally. Or a word that you like.
Oh yeah, there's so many songs that I love that I, you know, and maybe I don't want to know what the actual meaning, because I've got the music video in my head. I don't want to see the official video. I want to play the movie that I've made about what I think this song is about to me. So. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about like talking about the songs. Like, I do love talking about songs and music, but it is kind of, I do sort of like clam up when I'm asked to explain my songs.
Right, and especially this way, because it was done not just in your head. You had others, even though the lyrics and the music might have started, but you had other influences in that room while you were doing it.
Yeah, yep.
That's exciting though.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's cathartic, as they say. But yeah, it's cool. I do, yeah. I thank God for music. This might make sense especially for this podcast. The one song at the end of the record that we really take a lot of liberties, let's say, and the one that I brought to the band, I was like, hey, here's a song. It's six verses, no chorus. I don't know what I want to do with it. I don't know if it needs to have a chorus. I don't know if I want to have a chorus, but this is what I have. And so we just, this was a thing that really grew organically, and it really grew as, I mean, it's the longest song on the record, and it goes into this sort of spacey hippie jam, which is something that I never would have done,
right?
And I would have said that's lame, and I would have said there's no way we're doing this. But as we were getting into it, and as we just sort of followed the, you know, the muse of the song and of the lyrics, it felt completely right. And we did all these fun things. Dave, our guitarist, is just insane, and you know, we did a lot of stuff towards the end of the song where we dropped an amp as a percussion thing. We basically dropped it and recorded the sound of an amp makes when you drop it, and it
with like the reverb.
Yeah, the reverb tank, you know, goes.
Yeah,
all,
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so we did a lot of fun stuff, but the song is about the idea that nobody knows you as well or in an intimate way like your car stereo. Like you are, when you're alone, especially when you're driving at night, depending on where you're going or where you're coming from, I feel like you are yourself. You're the most yourself when you're sort of alone and you're singing to the radio and you are sort of being your authentic person and the shit you think about and the things that, you know, so I wanted to write a song that is about your relationship with your car stereo. And, so there's, and it ends up being, you know, it's six verses. There's a lot of, I don't want to explain each one, but there are a lot of nods to people. A few in especially like I'd said that a lot of the record has nods to people that I've known that have passed. There's a little nod to John Bunch in that song. And but yeah, I think that that song, and that was the sort of the sort of the visual for the album cover. It's just that once we sort of cracked that one and we started letting go and playing in a way that I had never really played before. I mean, it almost sounds like, you know, like it, the Grateful Dead at times, which is, I've never been a fan of.
Right.
But it's like, it was cool. It really felt like we were exploring stuff that at least I had never really, really tried. I think once we had that one down, I was like, okay, this is definitely the band that I've always wanted to be in. So anyway, Car Stereo. No one knows you like your Car Stereo.